Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
This is their region. This is their land. This is about their sovereignty and their autonomy.
Alaska Native leaders rally in D.C. to support the Willow Project. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, March 1st. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the VA Secretary speaks to veterans in Bethel.
Our number one clinical priority is to reduce and to end veteran suicide.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Alaska's rate of violent crimes has increased in contrast to the national trends. The increase is driven by extremely high rates of rape and aggravated assault, according to statistics presented Monday to the State Senate Judiciary Committee. The Alaska Beacon reports that the statistics from the Federal Bureau of Investigation's crime reports and from law enforcement agencies around the state show that in both Alaska and the nation, the overall crime rate has steadily declined since 1979. In Alaska, the overall decline is the result of a drop in property crimes, as rates of violent crime continued to rise during the 4-decade period. The information was presented by Troy Payne, director of the Alaska Justice Information Center at the University of Alaska Anchorage. The most recent numbers are for 2021. Payne said the rate of rapes in Alaska since 2013 has been 3 to 4 times the national average based on reported cases. Rates of reported aggravated assault in Alaska are roughly twice the national average since about 1993. Homicide rates in Alaska, though, have decreased in a trajectory similar to the national average. The Biden administration is expected to announce soon whether it will approve the ConocoPhillips permit for Willow. That's a major oil drilling project in the National Petroleum Reserve. Rallying for the project at the U.S. Capitol today, Alaska Native leaders stood with the state's congressional delegation wearing Willow Yes lapel stickers. Independent State Representative Josiah Putkatuk from the North Slope said revenues from the oil production will support rural communities and a culture that is dependent on subsistence whaling and hunting.
When we talk about environmental justice and protecting the environment that us Alaska Natives, we're part of that environment. We always have been and we always will be. And that's why it's important to underscore the opportunities for a better quality of life, staying away from the third world conditions that the generation immediately before me grew up in.
Over its 30-year lifespan, Willow is projected to produce as much as $10 billion in revenue for the state and the North Slope Borough. Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola says the administration should listen to her constituents, particularly the consensus opinion of the Inupiaq people of the Arctic.
This is their region. This is their land. This is about their sovereignty and their autonomy to go forward with their economic development, which will help the state of Alaska. It will help residents across our state.
Environmental groups, though, say approving the Willow Project would be the wrong move for an administration committed to slowing climate change and transition to an economy based on renewable energy. A decision from the Biden administration could come as early as next week. Last week, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary Dennis McDonough visited VA facilities and community partners in Fairbanks and Anchorage to discuss the care and benefits provided to veterans. McDonough was joined by Representative Peltola in Bethel. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello attended the town hall meeting and has this report.
We just wanted to start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh, yeah.
That's U.S. Representative Mary Peltola kicking off a meeting at Bethel's VFW late last week.
And to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty.
At a table alongside Peltola was the U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Dennis McDonough, and Bethel's post commander, Henry Hunter Sr.
You heard veterans speak on a teleconference with the secretary and their concerns and how hard it is to get to the VA from their villages. And they stressed the high cost of living here in Bethel or in the YK Delta. Just to fly from Hoover Bay, I think it's about $600 one way. So it is pretty expensive for those veterans.
More than a dozen veterans attended the listening session. Peltola and McDonough answered their questions for almost 2 hours. Veterans said they are concerned about the lack of benefits and internet access, Alaska's high cost of living, and their concerns about the U.S. being dragged into a war between Russia and Ukraine. When it comes to veterans in rural Alaska, McDonough says rural communities across the country serve at a higher rate than citizens living in urban or suburban areas. When those service members separate or retire, they often return home to their small communities. Alaska Natives, in particular, serve at a higher rate.
I thought it was really important to come out here to Bethel and to see the particular life that our veterans here live, so that we are making sure that we're getting care available to them, getting benefits that they've so earned and so richly deserve available to them in a reasonable way, not making them have to fly halfway across the biggest state in the Union to get that done.
One big issue that came up is the rate of veteran suicide. The most recent data available is from 2020, and one sobering metric is clear. More U.S. vets have died by suicide in the last 10 years than service members who died from combat in Vietnam. Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan is co-sponsoring a proposal for the VA to study the effects of medical cannabis on vets with PTSD and chronic pain.
We want to make sure they take a hard look at whether there isn't a way for us to get better access to research the potential uses of cannabis for things like PTSD.
Veterans in attendance and at large said they don't think the government is doing enough. McDonough's response?
Our number one clinical priority is to reduce and to end veteran suicide.
Recently, the VA invested $3 million into an app for Native veterans to reduce suicide. McDonough said it connects veterans who are at risk or in crisis to care in their home communities.
So this is precisely the kind of activity that we wanted to invest in to see if we can grow it so that other veterans in Alaska and then other veterans across the country can get access in a timely way to the care that they deserve.
At the VFW Hall in Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, we'll get to know the rookie mushers in this year's Iditarod.
Some kids want to be a firefighter for a year or two. For me, it was just dog musher and it never changed.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents go to great lengths to protect their little ones. When it comes to protection from childhood diseases, go with the safest, most effective choice. Start strong by getting all recommended vaccines for your baby by age 2. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. That's vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The Juneau Assembly has joined Petersburg, Wrangell, Sitka, and Ketchikan in supporting Southeast Alaska's king salmon troll fishery against a lawsuit that could threaten its future. A resolution passed by the Assembly Monday night opposes a lawsuit filed by the Wild Fish Conservancy, which says the federal government has not adequately addressed the fishery's impacts on southern resident killer whales in Puget Sound. Juneau Assembly member Carol Treem drafted the resolution. At a committee meeting earlier this month, she said it's important for Juneau to support the trollers.
It's a lot less visible in Juneau than it is in Petersburg, Wrangell, Sitka, or Ketchikan, like the size and the impact of the commercial fishing industry, but it is still a pretty big part of our economy.
In December, a judge recommended halting the winter and summer king salmon troll fisheries in southeast Alaska. A final decision from a federal judge in Washington is expected to come soon. Juneau Assemblymember Maria Gladyshevsky questioned whether the resolution would have much impact, since the magistrate judge already issued a recommendation.
It just seems ill-timed. Would have been better, even a year ago before the judge decided. You don't really help a legal case by a resolution from an assembly.
But Treem said the Alaska Trollers Association expects to fight the decision. The trollers argue that other factors, like pollution in Puget Sound, are more to blame for the whale's population decline.
The Trollers Association does anticipate a lengthy appeals process. So in terms of timing, I think that, you know, even though there's been a decision made, it's still appropriate for us to be signaling our support because it is an ongoing process.
Several Southeast communities have contributed money to the Alaska Troller Association's legal defense fund. Juneau's resolution did not include a donation, though. Sitka Representative Rebecca Himshute has introduced a resolution in the Alaska House of Representatives urging federal and state agencies to defend the troll fishery. At a roundtable event with Wrangell community members and officials in late February, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan answered questions and reiterated his support for development within the state. KSTK's Sage Smiley reports.
Senator Dan Sullivan focused on infrastructure needs and development, both on Wrangell Island and throughout Alaska.
I got a tour here today. You know, I know there's some big plans, but we're going to need more ships. Navy vessels is my bigger goal, and I think what you guys are doing here in Wrangell has enormous potential, particularly with the mill site that we were at today that the borough just bought. So that's very exciting.
The former Wrangell Lumber Mill site is one of, if not the only, remaining undeveloped deepwater ports in southeast Alaska. The borough bought the $2.5 million property last year with the hope that with some new development, the former beating heart of Wrangell's economy could prove an economic cornerstone once again. During a question and answer meeting with Wrangell constituents, Sullivan spoke out against what he called the latest ping pong with the reinstatement of the Clinton-era roadless rule in Tongass National Forest. He told attendees it runs counter to his pro-development stance for the state and said the roadless designation also hampers tourism and growth. Sullivan also strongly condemned a federal lawsuit filed against the National Marine Fisheries Service by Seattle-based environmental group the Wild Fish Conservancy that could shut down the Southeast Alaska king salmon troll fishery. He called it an outrage and said he'll be filing an amicus brief against the suit.
This lawsuit is ridiculous. Think about what they're trying to do. Shut down this fishery. Estimates are that could impact Southeast by $100 million. For orca problems in Puget Sound. They're not asking for the fishery in Puget Sound to be shut down. They're not asking about the pollution in Puget Sound. They're looking at shutting down our fishery here. Idiotic. And an abuse of the Endangered Species Act.
Asked whether he'd support disaster relief for fishing families if the troll fishery gets shut down, Sullivan pointed out the disaster relief system is slow-moving and requires a state declaration and federal cooperation.
It's actually a really good question if that would constitute a disaster. I think it would, but the governor would have to declare that and then shoot it up the federal system. But we would be watching that very closely. Hopefully we don't have to get there.
During his visit to Wrangell, Sullivan met with borough officials and took tours of infrastructure priorities like the old mill site, harbor projects, potential housing development at the site of a former BIA boarding school, and the community's aging dams and water treatment plant. He also held a meeting with the local tribal government, the Wrangell Cooperative Association, which emphasized veterans allotments, the Southeast Landless legislation, and transboundary mining issues. Sullivan said that despite his pro-development stance, he's also focused on protecting Alaska watersheds and getting more information from the Canadian government about mining activity and its impacts.
I've actually raised this issue directly with Prime Minister Trudeau twice in different meetings. His responses to me were very, in my view, very weak. But I do think the provincial leaders are starting to get a little bit more focused on it. And in our meeting with the WCA today, we talked about it. And I think having a tribal representation on this is important as well. So we're going to keep pressing it.
While Wrangell faces the same issues as many other Alaska communities, inflation, lack of housing and childcare, a shrinking education budget, Sullivan concluded by saying his goal as a senator is to help the community seize and harness upcoming opportunities for its own development and growth. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Concerns over health issues such as cancer and other diseases have driven researchers and members of the Sivukuk communities of Savunga and Gamble to investigate a connection between failing health and environmental contaminants. Those contaminants come in the form of persistent organic pollutants, or POPs, and toxic metals. Much of the toxic compounds found on St. Lawrence Island and elsewhere in Norton Sound come from abandoned military sites. Pam Miller, Executive Director of Alaska Community Action on Toxics, or ACAT, says these chemicals can have dangerous long-term effects.
Persistent organic pollutants are chemicals that are highly toxic, and they're bioaccumulative, so they can bioaccumulate in the food web. And they can cause a range of health problems, including endocrine disorders such as thyroid disease. They can harm learning and development.
POPs and toxic substances on St. Lawrence Island have led to continuing exposure of the Yupik people to contaminated air, water, and especially traditional foods. Miller says ACAT has been researching the impacts of that exposure over the past two decades in the Norton Sound region and the larger Arctic area.
Community-based research out here on St. Lawrence Island for about 20-plus years at the request of the tribes here to understand the long-term effects of military contamination and also the effects of contamination coming into the Arctic from all over the hemisphere.
According to V. Wai'i, a Savunga tribal citizen and ACAT employee, holding the federal government accountable for the contamination of the island has been difficult.
The burden of proof was put on my people. It's been very difficult to hold the military accountable. And we partner with our tribes here, Native Village of Gamble, Native Village of Savunga.
Wai'i was appointed in 2021 to the Biden administration's White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. The Advisory Council provides advice and recommendations on how to address current and historic environmental injustices across the United States.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska. Grant applications are now being accepted for tribal justice grants through the U.S. Department of Justice. Coordinated Tribal Assistance Solicitation, or CETAS grants, fund tribal courts and tribal law enforcement, open to federally recognized tribes across Alaska. Applications are open until March 21st. Learn more at atjrc.org/CTAS. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tribal Justice Resource Center.
More than one in four competitors in this year's Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race are rookie mushers. They include a former garbage truck driver, a father and son duo from the East Coast, and a Denali climber. Alaska Public Media's Ben Matheson tells us how this year's crop of Iditarod rookies have spent years following a dream and forging their own path to the starting line.
Jennifer Labar got hooked on long-distance adventures while hiking 1,000 miles on the Appalachian Trail.
But it got me in the mindset of like, man, this long-distance stuff, these really big, epic journeys is just life-changing in a really good way.
She's already climbed Denali, and now it's on to the 1,000-mile Iditarod. 40-year-old Labar is eager to get into the same travel mindset with her 14 dogs.
I'm going to pack all my stuff and we're going to hit the trail. And after so many miles, we're going to take a break and, you know, just rest and eat and then take off and run again.
Labar is among the 9 rookies in this year's small field of 33 mushers. though three of them raced last year and nearly reached the finish in Nome before being caught in a ground blizzard and dropping out, so they're still considered rookies. But for Labar, who lives in Healy, this is her very first Iditarod. That's the case for 33-year-old Eddie Burke Jr. too. His introduction to dog mushing came when he showed up at the Iditarod banquet to get some gambling intel.
I knew nothing about dog mushing. I went to this banquet with some friends because we were betting on Iditarod, and we were basically there to do a recon mission and talk to mushers and, you know, see who was who had what and who was confident and that kind of thing.
Something clicked that night, and Burke started running dogs for fun with friends. But his race career accelerated 3 years ago when musher Aaron Burmeister asked him to take over racing his team. Burke quit his job driving a garbage truck in Anchorage and moved to Nenana to run dogs.
You know, I didn't think about it too long. I was hooked on mushing. I fell in love with it.
And then he wanted to take it to the next level. He's quickly built up a reputation in mid-distance racing by winning the Kinnick 200 and placing third in the challenging Kuskokwim 300 in Bethel. Like Burke, 23-year-old rookie Hunter Keith is also running dogs from an established kennel. He's driving dogs for Ramey Reddington, the son of Iditarod founder Joe Reddington Sr.
Yeah, if you had told 6-7-year-old me that I'd be running my rookie race with Ramey Reddington's dog team, I don't think I would have even believed myself or anyone who told me that. It's pretty unreal and super special to be getting to race a team that's Ramey's life work.
Growing up in Michigan, he followed the race each March and imagined running it one day.
I never changed my dream. It always stayed the same. Like some kids want to be a firefighter for a year or two. For me, it was just dog musher and it never changed.
A love for dogs started early for 25-year-old Bailey Vitello, who was standing on the sled runners at age 3 with his dad, Greg. But 47-year-old Greg says it was Bailey who suggested they both run the Iditarod together as rookies, and he couldn't say no.
Your son says, let's go do this now. Let's pick this year and let's just go do it. Because, you know, let's do it. Let's both do it in the same year.
The two New Hampshire mushers make up what may be the first ever pair of father-son Iditarod rookies in the same race. Bailey raced the junior Iditarod as a teenager and has been gearing up for the full race.
I've kind of just grown into the fact that, like, one day we'd want to run Iditarod. And it took a long time and generations of dogs and figuring out what direction we like and how to become a distance musher. And
Bailey has raced dogs in France, the lower 48, and Alaska, turning into what his dad describes as an impressive musher.
When he was little, I used to manage kennel and feed the dogs and pick the poop, right? You know, but now he's doing most of that stuff. And his work ethic is tireless. You know, it's impressive, you know, for a young guy. It's great to see. It's hard not to support that, right? And the idea that we can go do this together is amazing.
After leaving the race start in Willow, the Vitello's running schedules may not have much overlap. So, after a lifetime of preparing for Iditarod together, they'll plan to meet each other at the finish line in Nome. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Ben Matheson.
The Iditarod kicks off with the ceremonial start in Anchorage on Saturday, and the race restarts Sunday in Willow. But first, Emily Robinson of Nenana has repeated as junior Iditarod champion. Robinson bested 15 other teams in the 150-mile race from Knick Lake to Willow this past weekend. Robinson's winnings include a $6,000 scholarship, a new dog sled, and a trip to Nome for the Iditarod Finishers Banquet. Speaking at the Junior Iditarod Awards ceremony, Robinson thanked her family for the support.
My parents and my brother, we've been training together ever since fall time, and we've been doing this as a family. And I want to thank them for all their dedication and hard work, because obviously I wouldn't be here without them.
According to a post on the Robinson Racing Kennels Facebook page, Emily is the first female to win the Junior Iditarod twice in its 46-year history. Morgan Martins of Wisconsin and Ellen Reddington of Wasilla finished second and third. 14 of the 16 teams that started the race finished. All Junior Iditarod finishers received scholarships and prizes. This year's Junior Iditarod field was the largest since 2009. Portable Southeast is an island-hopping art show designed to break down the physical and social barriers that divide the Alaska Panhandle. It's organized by the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council and showcases work from Alaskan artists across 6 different towns and cities. Each month, the exhibit's 22 paintings are flown to a new venue. The exhibit just left Petersburg's Clausen Memorial Museum and is headed for Sitka. KFSK's Shelby Herbert visited the exhibit and has this report.
Director of Petersburg's museum, Cindy Lagadakis, unpacked the exhibit at the beginning of February. She says the pieces came off the jet in individual tote bags.
Juno Arts and Humanities Council has done a really incredible job of organizing this. And the totes were set up with foam to protect each image. Everything is labeled, so everything will go back in the exact same spot that they were shipped to me. It makes it very easy to pack it up and very easy to unpack it, except for I almost missed one little piece I thought was missing. And then
the piece she's talking about is a photo painting made of scrap plastic, and it's immediately clear why she almost missed it. The picture is nearly transparent. It's also tiny. The weathered frame could easily sit in the palm of your hand. It's titled I Am Alive by Katie Ione Craney and features words in Braille. Lagadakis carefully placed it in a beam of light and at eye level, inviting viewers to reach out and touch its raised surface. The Juno Arts and Humanities Council sends along suggestions for how to arrange the art, but each museum space is different. Lagadakis says curators have a lot of creative control over where the art goes during each visit.
You know, every space that's displaying the art is different, so you have to accommodate what available space you have, how people are going to see it when they walk into the gallery. You know, you want people to feel invited and also see enough that they're drawn in and they want to look at more of the artwork, and create little vignettes of color and subject and texture. So
Portable Southeast features a wide range of mediums, including embroidery, oil painting, and basketry. There's even a 2-foot-long jellyfish made out of plastic trash. It dangles from the ceiling. The tentacles flutter with every slight draft of wind. The spread of art is diverse, but each piece is travel-sized and illustrates some aspect of life on the coast. Last year, a panel of curators from across Southeast Alaska, including Lagadakis, selected the 22 pieces you can see today.
We intentionally spread out. You know, we wanted as many artists represented as possible. So I think you were only allowed to submit 3 pieces, because we didn't want a whole show of just 1 or 2 people. We wanted to make sure there was a broad representation. The idea was to grab as many different pieces of art as we could.
The Portable Southeast exhibit will tour across Southeast Alaska until June. Its next stops are Harbor Mountain Brewing Company in Sitka, then Port Chilkoot Distillery in Haines. Before the exhibit returns to Juneau, it will visit a yet undetermined location in Yakutat. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin and Ben Matheson in Anchorage, Francisco Martinez Cuello in Bethel, Katie Anastas in Juneau, Sage Smiley in Wrangell, Greg Knight in Nome, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Shelby Herbert in Petersburg. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Madeline Rose is our producer. Thanks to Liz Ruskin for filling in. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. Planned gifts as a bequest to your local station builds a legacy that is long-lasting. Thanks for considering this option. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.